But we had said that the meeting would start at past 10 last week because we had to have a consultation with the parliamentary law advisor from 10 to half past. Just that during the time of our consultation, then there arose another problem from IT. And so they had to come and assist. And so that's why we took some 5 minutes later than half past 10. Do you want to say something?
No, Chair, my apologies. It's quite a hectic Tuesday. I just wanted to check for how long are we going to take because I've got another meeting at 12.
I'm sure that will depend mostly on us because themselves are going to just run through and their amendments will go through the bill line by line, and if we don't have any more queries, then we will be done. Because we've had the briefing about the bill. All that they need to do now is that they take us line by line. And that is what we were being shown by the state law advisor as to how to read the amendment line by line. I wonder if Rene, do you have those copies for other members, the line by line one, the one that we were going to? Yeah, have you got that? Yeah, just give it to two members. Yeah.
You want to take pictures?
Yeah, I've got them myself. Actually, that makes you to read the line by lines directly because so that it doesn't cause confusion from there. You do not know what what has been removed and what has been inserted. So that reddish, that one, that is what the law advisors prepared for us. So that we can just look through there. And the other copy is where you can compare the reasons and other things, and you can, if there's a side slot there where you can just jot down our comment if you have got anything to input, you see. And when they finish taking us through, then you can answer. I'm sure you are following what I'm talking about, eh? Okay. Right. Without wasting time, I think we know one another here. Yeah? We don't need a special introduction. I think you can go ahead, CEO.
No, thanks, Chair and honourable members. We will not waste any time. I'm going to ask our head of legal service to take us through take the committee through the clause by clause of the bill, which we have projected, and we have circulated the copies of what is projected on the screen, which is a document with a navy blue color. So, Chair, we will then go through that. Over to you, please.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, honourable members. We have prepared this schedule which explains each provision of the bill and the potential impact of the provisions of the bill. I should perhaps, before I start, indicate that the purpose of the bill and each provision of the bill seeks to, amongst other things, harmonize the governance of the institutions, the science institutions that report to the minister. There are some few technical corrections that we intend to effect, but by and large, it harmonizes the provisions of all the provisions of this Science Council legislation and ensures consistency, so that at least in applying in implementing the law, we consistent throughout the system. I'll start with I'll use the order of the bill here, and this schedule reflects each and every provision that is in the bill. I'll start with clause 1 of the bill, which amends Section 7.2. In this one here, the intention is to ensure consistency in the process of appointment of chairperson of the CSR board with other science councils. All other science councils except the CSIR, the chairperson is appointed by the minister, and that's where it ends. But with the CSIR, the current provision requires that the minister consults with the board. So to ensure consistency, we have removed the requirement for consultation with the board in the appointment of the chairperson of the board by the minister. The next one, which relates to the process for the appointment of the board, the existing act did not prescribe a formal process, advertising process, in the appointment of the boss. So now we're proposing a change to now prescribe that all appointments of the board need to be, the nominations need to be obtained through a publication in the Gazette and also two newspapers circulating in the Republic. So we intend to, with all the entities, to have a standard appointment process in terms of advertising to ensure that we have the wider net of potential candidates that the minister can choose from. The CSIR Act, unlike other acts of the other entities, does not have any provisions requiring the minister to consult with Parliament in the appointment of the board. So we have not changed anything with regard to the CSIR in relation to the consultation with Parliament, because there is currently no provision regarding that. Clause, still on clause 1 of the bill, we proposing to amend section, to insert a new section in the bill, which is section 3B. This section seeks to give the minister powers to extend the term of the board for a maximum of 6 months, or until a new board is reconstituted, whichever comes first. It seeks to cater for some, practical, realities that I experience when we implement the legislation, like unforeseen delays with regard to the process of, appointing or replacing. So it's a power that will be exercised as and when necessary, but we don't foresee it being used, as a matter of course, but in exceptional cases where it's not possible to constitute the board within the time to extend it a bit. We have had instances where we had, you know, to extend it a bit. But we're limiting that, you know, exercise of that power to only 6 months. Still on clause one, section 8, we're adding section 8 on the CSIR Act, which provides for the, which sets out the grounds for the disqualification of members of the board and also the, you know, for termination of the board and the filling of vacancies. In the CSIR Act, no grounds were set out for, you know, how, when do you need to disqualify members of the board or when do you need to terminate members of the board and the filling of processes. So we're bringing in provisions that deal with those issues which we felt are critical to ensure certainty, you know. In some, like I indicated before, that the intention is to harmonize these bills and ensure consistency, because we find that in some of these acts, there are provisions dealing with these matters like discussion and termination. In some, they are not, but in some, they may be dealing with them, but not, you know, adequately, and we're ensuring that we close those gaps to ensure that on issues like relating to disqualification and termination of members and filling of boards, we have got, you know, common regulation across the board. Clause 2 now. Clause 2, it's a new insertion here. We're inserting a provision relating to the dissolution of the board. In most of the acts, you know, governing the Science Council, we didn't have provisions relating to the dissolution of the board. So we're trying to also harmonize this. The proposed provision sets out the grounds upon which the minister can exercise this power, which are limited to in cases where the board is unable to perform its duties in terms of the acts or their grounds for management, or there is a breakdown in the relationship between the board and the minister, or there is a breakdown in relationship amongst the board members, which renders the effective function of the board impossible. So we're limiting the instances in which the minister can exercise this power to only these grounds. We believe that it will prevent a possible dysfunctional bond, because if these circumstances happen and there is no provision in the Act to deal with them, then the board may be rendered dysfunctional. But if you have got provision, so it's easier to prevent that situation occurring by providing upfront the provisions to deal with this if they happen. Clause 3 of the CSIR Act. It further qualifies the process and requirements for the appointments of CEOs of boards. We're providing for this to ensure that to ensure the recruitment of appropriate personnel to manage entities. The insertion is that it must be a suitable, skilled, and qualified persons, and that the appointment will have to follow a transparent, competitive process. So this requirement ensures that there is transparency and accountability in the process for the appointment of CEOs. Clause 3 also we have inserted a provision where we needed to ensure that there is certainty in the reappointment process of the CEO, because the legislation has either been silent or not clear in terms of whether they can, the CEOs can be reappointed and for how long a term of their appointment is. So we have inserted a provision where we clarify that to ensure that there is certainty. Clause 4, now we move to the National Research Foundation Act, which starts in Clause 4. Clause 4 of the National Research Foundation Act amends Section 6.1. 6.1, the intention of the purpose of the amendment is to strengthen the operational capability and governance of CSR by bringing in additional members of relevant entities. The department has identified the need to have the members of at least one member from the National Advisory Council on Innovation and a member of the Council on Higher Education to be added to the board of the CSIR to ensure that there is the NRF. Sorry, Chair. Thanks. To ensure that we strengthen its operational capability, because they bring in skills and knowledge that is required for NRF purposes. Clause 4, again, it amends Section 6.4, 6.2. In the same way as I indicated earlier with regard to CSIR, by standardizing now the appointment process for the board members and prescribing now the formal advertising process in the Gazette and newspapers to get nominations, so that we've got a wider net for potential candidates. The NRF Act currently provides for the appointment of board members after consultation with the committees of the National Assembly and the NCOP. The proposal is to remove the requirement for consultation with the Parliament in the appointment process. We believe that this may eliminate any potential delays in the process for the appointment and thereby improves efficiency in the process, so that the department may be able to respond quickly if there are vacancies or if they have got to reconstitute boards. Clause 4 of the NRF is amends Section 6.3. Here, it's just a correction of technical errors. There was a repetition of research in Clause 3, and also inclusion of public affairs and civil society. We just cleaning the provision to be much more clear in terms of what it relates to. So there are no implications. It's just a matter of correcting technical errors in the bill. Clause 4 also amends Section 6.4. We took a decision not to appear exhaustive in the listing of the entities or the institutions where members should be coming from for the board. We merely providing now for representativity of broad scientific disciplines, because we felt in listing we may run the risk of being exhaustive and end up with unintended exclusions, because the intention is to be as inclusive as possible in terms of broad scientific disciplines, but the listing was not achieving that purpose. Clause 4 again amends Section 651, 5A. Section 5A, we're deleting Section 5A. Section 5A provides for the minister to ensure that at all times in the appointment of the board, there is at least one third of the existing members of the board for continuity reasons. The department believes that this is not a matter that needs to be legislated on, but needs to be dealt with administratively. In case where there are difficulties to comply with it, it becomes difficult. It poses challenges. It will then be better if it's dealt with administratively. The intention is still there to ensure that there is a retention of skill and knowledge, and to ensure continuity, that when the board is being reappointed, some members of the board will have to be retained so that they can assist in the continuation of the business of the board. But this is what the matter is going to be dealt with administratively through a policy or internal policy on the appointment of board members. Clause 4 again still deals with it provides for the power to extend the period of the board for a maximum of 6 months. As I indicated before, because I'm probably going to have a lot of repetition on matters that I've referred to in the other acts dealing as this one with the extension of the term of the board for another 6 months. Clause 4 again also deals with the issue of disqualification of members of the board, the termination of membership and filling of vacancies, and like I indicated in the sign with regard to the CSR Act, that we're seeking to ensure that there are similar or the provisions for disqualification and termination of members and filling of vacancies are standardized across the board to ensure certainty. Clause 5 also inserts the provision relating to the dissolution of the board. It basically gives the minister the power to dissolve the board if the circumstances indicated, which I referred to with regard to the CSR Act, that he can exercise that power to ensure that the board is not rendered dysfunctional. And clause six, section 10A also ensures that we attract and recruit appropriate personnel to manage this board by insisting on suitable qualification and skills requirement, and it also makes a minor technical amendment by amending the nomination to selection, because the nomination process relates to the members of the board. And for the CEOs, it's a selection process. The Academy of South Africa of Science of South Africa, ASAF, we're making only one amendment, which deals with the extension of the term of the board for a further 6 months in cases where it becomes necessary. because of unforeseen delays or any other reason. Moving to the National Scientific Professions Act, Clause 9 of the National Scientific Professions Act amends Clause Section 3.1. The current provision requires the members of the board that represent organs of state, several departments, to be certified or professional, to be either certified, to be certified natural scientists or professional national scientists. We have encountered practical challenges in getting nominations from various government departments for people that possess those professional qualifications. The problem is people that are certified or professional qualifications are normally, you know, practicing scientists. We don't normally have those in government who are administrators. So if the requirement stays the same, then it becomes difficult to constitute a valid board, because now you need those people. If you don't get those people, it means that you'll never have the board, you know, will not be validly constituted. So we're excluding a requirement for only the state representatives on the board to be required to be a professional or certified natural scientist. But they will still be required to possess the skills and qualifications in the relevant scientific disciplines, but not be certified or professional scientist. We are actually having a challenge currently that the board has to be reconstituted, but in requesting nominations from the various government departments, we couldn't, you know, get nominations for people who satisfy the requirements of this. So the board currently can't be reconstituted validly, such that we have extended it, but we're running out of the power to extend it further is not in the act, such that in a couple of months, if this requirement is not excluded, we may face a situation where the board can't be extended anymore and can't be constituted validly, because the requirement for these people cannot be met. Clause 10 also is amend Section 4.2 to remove a requirement for the minister to prescribe the manner of appointing a panel to expert to prepare a short list. We, as I indicated earlier, we're trying to harmonize the processes in relation to the appointment of board members and also CEOs. We found that some of these acts provide differently from that process, so we're trying to make changes to ensure that we provide in a similar way for all the boards in respect of the processes. Clause 11 also amend Section 5.1 and 3 to harmonize the process for the extension of the term of office of members of the board. Also, in the National Scientific Professions Act, there is a provision for the extension of the term of office of the board after its prescribed period has expired, but it's not consistent with the provisions that we are recommending. So we're also amending that one to be consistent with the dispensation that we're trying to bring into place. Clause 11 amends subsection 4, section 5.4 to harmonize the process for the filling of board vacancies with other entities. This falls in squarely with the harmonization process in relation to the appointments and replacement of members of the board to ensure consistency. So this changes is also in line with the broad, you know, principle of the Act to harmonize this process. Clause 12. Clause 12, Clause 64, we're saying the previous amendment that we have effected has then rendered that provision redundant. So it's
sorry, just a moment. Those members that are just coming now, if you look at there's one of the documents that we have, yes, that one. That's what he's talking about, all the amendments, they are clearly tabulated there. This is the whole Act as it is. Why it's scratched, the law advisor decided to make it easy for us so that you don't page this and that side and that side. So if where it is scratched, it means that is what has been excluded in the old Act, and what is in red line, that is what has been inserted, included in the new Act. So it makes you to read the document very easily. So you can compare what he's talking about from that big A3 sheet of paper together with that directly. Right. Okay, continue.
Thanks, Sean. Clause 13, it seeks to insert a new section 7A, which gives the minister the powers to dissolve the council if the circumstances indicated, which I alluded to earlier, exist to ensure that we prevent the possibilities of the board becoming dysfunctional. Clause 14 of the Natural Scientific Professions Act also ensures that we able to recruit appropriate personnel to manage our entities by providing for the skills and qualification requirements to ensure that there is transparency and accountability for the management of public entities. Moving now to the Human Science Research Council, which starts from clause 15. The amendment, the Act currently provides for the approval of the short list of candidates by the National Assembly. We're proposing to remove the requirement for consultation with Parliament in order to eliminate any potential delays in the process for the appointment of board members and thereby improves efficiency. Clause 15 amends Section 5(8). Actually, clause 15, there is a deletion of subsection 8, which was consequential because of our introduction of the new process for the dissolution, because the HRC Act currently provides for some process for the dissolution of the boards, but that process is not consistent with the process that we are recommending to the committee, yes. So we removed that provision relating to dissolution and is to be replaced with the new provision that we're proposing now for the dissolution, which set out properly the grounds and what happens in the meantime, how much time the minister has to constitute and to deal with all those practical arrangements and interim arrangements. Still on clause 15, we also removing a provision requiring the one third of the board to be retained during the reconstitution process for the reasons that we indicated earlier that it is a matter that we believe that needs to be dealt with administratively, which actually the minister is already taking into account when the reappointments of the board and reconstitutions of the board are dealt with. Clause 15 amends section 512. To cater for a situation where the public nomination process did not result in the recruitment of appropriate candidates. Here we're saying the requirement is for the public to be requested to nominate appropriate candidates through a publication in the Gazette and the newspapers. But there may be certain exceptional situations where that process will not result in an appropriate pool of candidates, and we're providing for the power of the minister to intervene by making the necessary appointment to ensure that situation is redressed, but also in a transparent manner, so that you know, we remove the possibilities or suspicion of biasness. Clause 15 also amends or inserts clause 513, which provides for the extension of the period of the board beyond the members of the board, any or all members of the board beyond the prescribed period for a maximum of 6 months to cater for any possibly unforeseen delays which may, if not provided for, may result in the board not in a gap with the board not being constituted timeously and which may affect then the functioning of the agencies or institutions. Clause 16 also of clause 16 of the Human Science Research Council, in the same way as the other science council, it inserts now the power of the minister to dissolve the board if the circumstances highlighted in the provision exist, to ensure also that we don't have a situation where the board, the agency becomes dysfunctional because of problems that could have been resolved by just dissolution, but because the act didn't provide for that, then it could not have been done. So we're providing for that to be that power to be exercised in those instances. Clause 17. Clause 17 also harmonizes the process for the appointment of the CEO to ensure that we're consistent with other entities, to ensure that there's requisite skills and qualification for the CEOs, people who are given the responsibility to manage our entities. Clause 18 amends. Sorry, I just need to make sure that I'm reading from the right place.
Yes, according to this is clause 18, section 17. Is that what you're doing?
Yes. Oh, clause 17 corrects a technical. It makes an amendment. Sorry, if you can bear with me. Oh, okay. Yes. Since we're now providing for a new process of dissolution, so the SRC Act currently provides for a dissolution process, but that dissolution process is not consistent with the process that we are providing for now. So we had to delete that provision and insert this new process. So it has become redundant. That's why it's been deleted, because now it's being replaced by a new process of the dissolution. So there is no impact on that one, because the dissolution is still there. It's just that the process changes. Clause 19 is now the Technology Innovation Agency. Also, with the Technology Agency, we're also intending to standardize now the process for the appointment of the board by
the Technology Innovation Agency. Remember that what you are saying is being recorded here. So you must say exactly what you're talking about, because whenever there will be a query at Constitutional Court, they'll find that you didn't talk about Technology Innovation Agents. You talk about technology agents, then they'll say we don't have that. Be careful that you... Because you are processing law here. It says what it means.
Thanks. Clause 19 of the Technology Innovation Agency Act amends Section 5.4 in order to standardize the appointment of board processes by prescribing, in a similar way as the other entities, a formal process now to advertise in the Gazette and the newspapers to ask for public nominations to ensure that we broaden the net for potential candidates to be considered for appointment. Clause 19 also amends Section 5.5. The Technology Innovation Agency currently provides for the appointment of members of the board in consultation with the National Assembly. The amendment proposes the removal of the requirement for approval of Parliament for the appointment of board members. This, we believe that it will eliminate potential delays in the process of the appointment of the board, and may possibly also be in conflict with the constitutional principle of separation of powers. Clause 19 again amends Section 5 and 7 of the Technology Innovation Agency. Basically, with
it's not Technology Innovation Agency, it's an act. It's an act. This is why we talk about acts here. So if you do not include act, then you're talking about the organization, the institution, you're not talking about the act.
Thanks. And can I just refer to it as TIA Act?
Yes, exactly. You can even say that, because that's what it's supposed to mean, because you are being recorded.
Okay, thanks. Clause 19, it affects amendments to the TIA Act in sections 5, subsection 6, and subsection 7. Basically, these provisions are being deleted because the new provisions relating to the dissolution and reconstitution of the board are being inserted in the Act, and the current provisions for that process, which are not consistent with the proposed provisions, therefore had to be replaced by deletion. So basically, this clause deletes those because they now become redundant with the new provisions. Clause 19 again seeks to provide for a broad representativity in the board. In all legislation dealing with science councils, we have provided for the boards to be broadly represented in relation to gender, you know, ethnicity, and the rest, you know. But you know, generally Democrats of the party. But with the TIA, there was no provision for that, so we felt to be consistent in line with the purpose and of this act to insert the provisions requiring that there has to be that board representativity. Section 19 also insert section 5(9) to provide for the minister's power now to make a nomination, to nominate potential members of the board if the public nomination process did not result in the sufficient number of people with the required skill and qualifications, that he'll have to redress that situation by making the appointments through following a transparent manner, in a transparent manner. Clause 20 is merely a correction of a technical error. It currently refers to that the minister, after consulting with the members of the board, may remove a member from the on account of. But the correct way is to be after consultation with the board, not the members of the board. So it's just that correction, which is technical, and there is no impact on it other than that it ensures that there is clarity in what needs to be done. Clause 21 of the TIA Act adds a provision which gives the minister the power to extend the period of office of the board by a maximum period of 6 months, or until a new board is constituted, if that happens early, to ensure that we don't end up with a situation where they may not be a board in place because there have been unforeseen delays in the process of replacing the boards. Clause 22 inserts the provision relating now to the power of the minister to dissolve the board if the circumstances which I highlighted earlier indicated in the provision okay. Also, it deals with the process for that dissolution and the reconstitution and the time frames and also what needs to happen during the period between the dissolution and reconstitution, what we refer to as interim process. Clause 23 amends section 11, subsection 1 and subsection 7. to harmonize the process for the appointment and determination of conditions of service of the CEO of the agency to ensure consistency with other entities. Currently, the minister appoints the CEO of the of TIA, and to ensure that the process is harmonized and is consistent, there is consistency with other entities. We're providing for the minister to appoint the board instead of the minister to appoint the CEO in the same way as it happens in the other with regard to the other entities, but for the minister to be consulted in the process of determination of the conditions of service of the CEO in a similar manner as other institutions. Perhaps I also want to mention that in this schedule, in the last page, there are changes that we want to highlight that we'll want to come to that we want to propose to the committee, but not now, so that at least the committee has at the back of their mind that there are these changes that we still need to effect, which are aligned to the intention of the bill as expressed in this text, but were somehow omitted that deals with also issues of determination of conditions of service of the CEO, but we'll get to that at the end of this presentation.
Are those changes in the principal act that you introduced to Parliament? I'm saying the changes that you want to propose at the end, are they in the principal act that was introduced to us in Parliament, or no?
They are not in the Principal Act, but some of them, there are corrections of what is in the Principal Act.
Okay, continue.
Right, thanks. Moving on now to the South African National Space Agency Act, the SENSA Act. Clause 24 of the SENSA Act amends Section 7.1. Currently, Section 7.1 provides for the approval of the shortlist of candidates by the National Assembly, the candidates of the members of the board. The amendment seeks to remove the requirement for the approval of the shortlist of candidates by the National Assembly to ensure that any potential delays in the process is eliminated so as to improve efficiency in the process for the appointment of the board. Clause 24 again amends Section 7, Subsection 3. To cater for a situation where the public nomination process did not result in the recruitment of appropriate candidates. So we're basically giving the minister the power to nominate or appoint candidates in a transparent manner where the pool of candidates that was obtained through the public nomination process did not result in the adequate number of suitably qualified and skilled members. Clause 25 inserts a provision now for the extension. Oh, sorry, clause 25.8.4. It basically now deletes the provision relating to the dissolution of the board, which was currently in place, but not consistent with the provisions now that we're introducing. So that deletion, basically, it's because the current provision has become redundant because of the introduction of the new a dispensation now for the dissolution of and reconstitution of the board. And clause 25 again, inserts section 8.5a, which gives the minister the power now to extend the period of office of any or all members of the board for a maximum period of 6 months, in case in cases of unforeseen delays or the like in the process for the appointment of members of the board. Clause 25 also amends section 7.8.7 to harmonize the process for the filling of vacancies in the board to ensure that it is consistent with the process that is followed in other entities. It's section 8, subsection 7.
Yeah, but you said section 7.8.7. That's what you said. Yeah, no, that's an error. I'm trying to correct the error.
Clause 26 of the SENSA Act inserts clause 13A, inserts section 13A, which gives the minister the power to dissolve the board, and it also provides for interim processes and the processes and timing for the reconstitution of the new board by the minister. Clause 27 amends section 14, subsection 1, and subsection 3 to harmonize the process for the appointment and the determination of the conditions of service of the CEO of the agency, in order to ensure that there is consistency with the other entities. It also removes this change removes the requirement for the minister to give approval to the appointment of the CEO, but retains his power to consultation in relation to the determination of the conditions of service of the CEO. Thanks, Chair. This is the end of the line by line reading of the bill and explanation of each provision of the bill, what it seeks to achieve, and the impact that it might have. If passed. Yeah, I've got this proposed, but I don't know. I've included here just to highlight to the committee that these are the changes that we'll like to propose, which are not part of this bill that is before the committee, but some of these changes affect certain corrections on this bill. Some typos that needs to be corrected through the committee amendments that we want to propose later. And also there are areas of inconsistency that were unfortunately not addressed here, which are in line with what is being brought before the committee in terms of harmonization of the processes for the appointment of CEOs, that we want to also propose for the committee's consideration and approval at some stage in order to be complete in relation to to effect the intention of the bill. Thanks.
We will ask our legal advisor also to guide us because because in our consultation, there were some warnings about changes, and we are not expect ourselves. She can tell us whether that is acceptable and at what level.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members. Chair, I looked at the proposed amendments. Now, these are all technical amendments and harmonizing proposals, it seems, from the department side that speaks to the actual bill as introduced. So none of these amendments go outside of the ambit of the bill. It doesn't go to section or doesn't speak to sections of the principal acts that aren't addressed in the bill. And if I see it, just for an example, there's in clause 4, they are merely addressing a typo where there was a reference only to the National Advisory Council. And as Chair noted, it's important to give a complete name of an institution, and they've now corrected that to say National Advisory Council on Innovation. So the amendments are mostly technical for typos or omissions that are brought in line, and the only one of a substantive change, and that's merely a consultation between the minister and the board that's being brought in with the National Research Foundation Act in a clause 6. They're just aligning that with the other proposals. It's for consistency purposes. My colleagues from the department can correct me if I'm wrong, but as far as I see it, it's technical. It's within the ambit of the bill as introduced. It doesn't go further than the clauses opened by the bill, and it doesn't speak to unopened provisions in the Principal Act. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Now that you have heard that, let me hear what members have to say, if they have any commentary. I see Honourable Smith.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks for the presentation. So as I get at this story, on this document he just referred to now, we're only referring to the last page, which are the further amendments to the what's before us. Okay, all right, fine. I've just got a couple of general questions. The first is, Chair, at some point you made reference to the fact that Parliament itself is applying its mind to a consistent approach towards appointment and governance issues relating to boards. Now, my question would be whether this bill before us is consistent with that framework, which probably does not yet exist, so I suppose the answer is no. But are we preempting a process that Parliament is about to initiate or has started, or what? Where are we in relation to a common approach to not just department's entities, but entities in general? So that's my first question. And secondly,
quickly clear that.
Oh, all right.
Tomorrow we still have got to go through this ourselves as Parliament. This is just a briefing clause by clause. But tomorrow, and we have from our law advisor those options. There are four options which we can discuss tomorrow, which include all those that we have been using.
No, the reason I ask the question, of course, is that it's simply a question of timing. That if Parliament's got this on its agenda for now, if it's current, then it seems logical to harmonize the process. If this is something Parliament's considering doing in 5 years' time, then obviously we can get on with this. So I'm just trying to get some sense of the time frame as it relates to a common process. Second question.
If that is what I referred to last time,
yes.
That's something that they had interest, but they have no framework, they have no time frame about it. So it may not even come.
Right, well, that does answer that then. Okay, the second one, Chair, to the Department, really, I suppose, is, let me make a very simple question. Are the processes, the appointment procedures, the provisions dealing with, whatever they're dealing with, are they essentially identical now for all the entities? And if they're not identical for all, I'm not talking about the wording or the specific amendment to a specific act, because obviously that's related to the way it was framed, but I'm just talking about the actual substantive nature of the beast. Is this a completely common, standardized, uniform approach throughout? And if it's not, can you highlight anywhere where something is different to, where there's any difference intended in the way you want to treat one entity versus another? And then thirdly, of course, one of the issues that I have as a bit of a thing is whether or why Parliament would be excluded. But be that as it may, because we'll still discuss that, the motivation put forward here for the exclusion of Parliament as part of the process is that it promotes efficiency, and secondly, that it helps eliminate delays. Now, in my recollection of engagement on this issue of appointment of boards and so on, I can't recall Parliament ever being responsible for any delays. In fact, if there have ever been any delays, it's because the appointment stuff that comes to us comes late, and that forces us to rush for our crazy. In other words, if the department gets its act together and does things timeously, there will be no delays. So I'm not quite sure what delays are intended. And secondly, what inefficiencies are occasioned by our involvement in the process? So what inefficiency is being removed by taking us out of the loop? It's not that I'm particularly mind whether we're in or out. I'm just trying to ascertain clarity on the motivation. Thank you.
I'm sure the last question that you dealt with, because we have had some consultation with the law advisor, will come. She will give you a good coverage of that. Otherwise, you can answer other questions that he has posed. But for now, you record them. Honourable Dr. Lawrence.
This one, yeah. Chair, I was covered partly by what Honourable Smith asked, but this last page, for instance, why now this extra page? Why wasn't it included all the corrections initially in the bill? Or am I misunderstanding this whole process? Why the extra page? Was it sloppy work done by the department, or why? And then also, again, my problem with this presentation was you read through a document without giving us proper background as to why and to how. I can give you an example or two. I can't go through all my questions. I'll keep you busy for the next hour. For instance, on page 3 and 4, and it's not the only examples of the same kind of correction or change. Clause 15, section 512, subsection 12, to cater for a situation where the public nomination process did not result in the recruitment of appropriate candidates. Why not? Why did it happen? Why was it not sufficient or a proper process? And then you mention the outcome is in a transparent manner. What do you mean by transparent? You should have explained to us exactly what, because it's vague. To me, everything is vague. The majority of changes are vague. You want to standardize or harmonize, but that's all you say. You keep on saying it. Standardize, harmonize. Another example, for instance, is on page 2. the Natural Scientific Professions Act, that one, it's only one, to exclude professional registration requirements for state representatives. Now, why? Why shouldn't they also be registered? You didn't give us a proper explanation as to why you want to change it. And so I can go on and on. I don't know whether we should ask these questions tomorrow or deal with it tomorrow, but this is a very vague presentation.
No, I just if you go to the first page, Honourable Member, you see there are topics of what each table represents. For instance, it says the Principal Act is this. It talks about the Scientific Research Council Act of 1988, and then it has clause in the bill which has been actually looked into, considered. It's clause 1, it starts there. It says amended section of the Act in that bill, it says section 7.2. In other words, if you look into also this...
Jay, I understood that. I went through the documentation.
Now,
I did my homework.
Now, there is rationale for amendment. That is what it explains. What is the rationale for the amendment? You see, it says that it is to ensure this and this and this and that. And then, has it any impact? And then it says that it removes the requirement for the minister to consult with the board. It improves efficiency. What?
I understand, but for instance, in a more transparent manner. I think explain to us how transparent and how are you going to ensure transparency, for instance. I can read. I understood the documentation, but I'm still not sure what the reasons for certain changes are, and you ensure us there will be transparency and there will be a harmonization of and whatever, and that's that.
I think I'll allow the delegate to answer you, but I'm not very sure myself of the detail of your question in the light of what is written here. I don't know how it's going to move out of all the reasons, the rationale, the impact, and so forth. But let me allow you to relate to with him directly. But any other input? Okay. In that way, can you respond to the questions?
So maybe can I just deal with the questions from Honorable Clover Lawrence, particularly in relation to the Clause 9. What was saying the Honorable Clover Lawrence is that there were instances where we have had to publish on over two occasions the call for nominations for people to serve on the board. Example in this case was SANSA, the South African National Space Agency. During the process, the public nomination process did not yield any positive results. Now, when you are faced with that situation, because you have not had any people who know who qualifies in terms of the technical nature of the entity you're dealing with, and the legislation is silent about any other process that you can activate to identify members of the board, it says that there's going to be vacuum in leadership, so therefore, you know, the entity will be, in other words, in tatters. So we then said that the legislation should provide for some kind of a mechanism for the minister to, for an example, find candidates, you know, not using the public nomination process. In this instance, you would probably even send specific requests to sector organizations to say if they could identify candidates. In a similar way that when we want to deal with cases of people who are disabled, that you would go directly to organizations that, you know, if you want candidates in this particular sector, you would go to those specific organizations. So it's really an enabling section in the legislation that would say when we hit the rock after following, and we can, when we, if we can prove that we have followed the public nomination process, and these are the names that we can even demonstrate that these are the people, the skills set that we received, and it's not in line with what we are looking for. Therefore, we opted for the other process. As I said, it's not defined here to say the minister will then either issue a notice to sector organizations, because remember, in certain sectors, for an example, you would have what one would regard as sector organizations, you know, that people or companies affiliate into, you know, that could actually help you. For example, I mean, we talk about accountants, you can go to SAICA, or you can go to the engineering council, you know, to look for good candidates. So basically, that's what we're indicating in that regard. Last year, we had a situation where with the SANSA Act, where after failing to get to attract good public nominations through a public process, then we activated that process, but the Parliament said that process is incorrect because it's actually not defined in law. We then turned back to say re-advertise again. So really, the Honourable Chair and members, that's basically what we're trying to deal with in relation to the Clause 9.
That's where delay comes in. That's the delay we're talking about.
Yes, yeah. And then on the issue of the delay, I think Honourable Smith is correct. most of the time the delay has nothing to do with Parliament, but it has to do with some of the process, I think, that we follow. But also, I think, the biggest issue here is about the separation of powers. But I think, Chair, said, I think that will be dealt with in a session. I just wanted to go to clause 15, I think, that you raised around, clause 9, I think. What I dealt with earlier on was clause 15. Clause 9, I think you raised an issue regarding the exclusion of provisional registration requirement for state representatives. This was not a requirement before, but I think it was inserted in the 2010 Laws Amendment Bill. In this instance, what you are saying is that SACNASP, the Act requires that there should be representatives from the public service or the departments in government and that are specified. But what we found during the reconstitution of the SACNASP board this year was that the people that were nominated by respective departments to sit on the SACNASP council were not registered as natural scientists. And it was difficult for some departments to get in their own employ people who are registered as natural scientists. So therefore, it became difficult for us to reconstitute the board. That is why ministers actually extended the current term of the board, because we were hoping that this clause will be relaxed in order for us to be able to appoint those individuals that are actually nominated by their respective departments to represent those departments in the council. In this instance, therefore, we couldn't do that because of this provision in the legislation that says there must be natural scientists and that they are registered. You do have people who are natural scientists, but you are not registered as natural scientists. So really, it provides for such relaxation in a sense. Thank you.
My question on the transparent manner.
You should always remember that if you must pass through the chair. If you have a follow-up question, again, you can say that. And then I can give you an opportunity. Have you a follow-up question on that? But you're not a new question. We allow for new questions. But if it's a follow-up from, if you have not got the clarification, then it's another thing.
I'm just not sure whether he's still dealing with my first question. That's all. But it's okay. I'll wait. I'll deal with it. That's the kind of explanations I was expecting. So it's not that I didn't understand the presentation, but sometimes it's necessary to give us the reasons, the background, so that we can understand the changes. That's all I was asking.
But these are some of the things that they had when they first briefed us. Remember, it's not their first time. We're now going through the bill clause by clause, but these are the briefings they did in the first instance when they came here. They gave us all these kind of reasons that they are talking about why they are changing the bill. I'm not sure whether you were around or not, but I think you are always present. Maybe you came later, maybe I can't remember.
May I answer you?
Yes.
I was there. I've got the presentation with me on my desk here, but it was very, very brief. And so I need specific background on certain clauses so that I can understand.
Okay.
Thank you.
Let's question, he says that you finished answering the question.
I finished, but I think on this issue of transparent process, I think that's what Honorable Robert Lawrence says, it's not exhaustive. I've indicated that in the bill we have not specified the process to say what, but it will mean that the minister will not just emerge with a name out of his pocket. It means that the minister can demonstrate to the public that I have written to Association X asking for names of individuals to serve on this particular entity without just, a minister actually, in the dark corner coming with the name of an individual. That's what we mean about the transparent process. In instances where there should be, for an example, Parliament would want to know how was Mavuso appointed in that board? The minister should be able to say that he was appointed by the engineering council, because I had asked for a name from the engineering council. So those are the kinds of things that we are saying. But I think if we have to specify in the law, in the legislation, I think it will be cumbersome in a sense. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
I think before you continue, let's allow the law advisor to just give another input, a response to what you asked about. I think now it's to us, Honourable Smith.
Yeah, I'm going to ask my second question.
No. They're still coming back. I think that I want us to be clear of that first, you see, about where we are. Let the law advisor info.
Thank you, Chair. Then just for clarity, this is now with regards to transparency specifically?
No. With regards to the options that are there for Parliament, you know, in terms of appointing these boards and dissolving them.
Chair?
A constitutional or not.
Thank you, Chair. That is primarily going to be part of our briefing tomorrow, just to explain that to the members, but I can give a short analogy just to link up this presentation with the clause-by-clause discussions tomorrow. What we highlighted, members had a comparative document from other institutions and other legislation. What we did is we went through them, and there's basically four trends that can be highlighted. We'll expand tomorrow, but the one that the department is currently proposing in the amendment bill, taking out the recommending role, the legislatively assigned recommending role of the committee, does not take away any of the committee's constitutionally mandated oversight powers. Those legislative assigned responsibilities are additional ones. It's a process where the committee gets involved, and yes, there's value to it, but taking that out is not unconstitutional in the sense that it doesn't limit or restrict the committee's mandate as it stands. It is for the committee to, in terms of its own internal procedures, manage how the committee does oversight over the department's functions in general. But that being said, also we considered, our office considered the principal act as they read currently, apart for the one instance where there's an in-consultation reference, which we agree with the department infringes on the committee's own constitutional powers as well, because you can't oversee a decision to which you are party. So we agree that one reference to in-consultation needs to be removed. But everything else where there is reference to after consultation, involvement with the committee and the committee recommending, that stands on the on the statute books. That's also not constitutionally unsound. So whether that responsibility is taken away or whether it's left on the statute books, we don't see anything wrong with that from a legal perspective. Then we also noted that in other forms of legislation, for example, the Police Services Act allows for the minister to run the process and appointments, but just calls on the minister to report to the relevant committee. That enables the committee or empowers the committee just with some more information when it does its oversight function. Or you can have a broader just responsibility with the relevant minister to consult, not stipulating when or what the role is or that nomination lists must be provided, but just leaving it to the minister to consult and inform, whether it be by letter or report to the committee, what he or she is doing in a process. So there's various degrees of consultation that we'll highlight tomorrow. Apart from in consultation, everything else is constitutional and a policy decision for the committee at the end.
Right. I think we can continue. Resume with your responses to the inputs.
Thanks, Chair. The Honourable Smith's question about whether after these amendments, if approved, the process for the appointment of boards in all entities will be identical. The answer is they will be identical except with respect to the Academy of Science of South Africa. that the Academy of Science, the process for the appointment of the board in of the Academy of Science of South Africa is different from the processes for the appointment of boards of all member of all the other entities, because the members of the board of the members of the council of the Academy of South of Science of South Africa are appointed by the members of the Academy themselves, and the reason is that the Academy has to be seen to be independent from government. Academies of science of worldwide are expected to maintain an arm's length relationship with government. So they appoint their own council, the members themselves. So the processes are different, and we felt there isn't a need because to interfere with the process, because that's a process that is recognized worldwide.
Just to follow up, Chair, on the on my third question, which was half answered, the question was whether the removal of a role of Parliament necessarily impacts upon the two issues that were raised, in fact, by the presentation, which was inefficiency and delays. And I think I got the answer, yes, the delays are not caused by Parliament. So I presume we could then throw that one out. Then the only issue is, does Parliament's involvement cause inefficiency? And according to your own document here, it says it eliminates potential delays, and thus there is improved efficiency, but that's only potential. So I'm still trying to get a cogent argument as to the merit of Parliament not being involved in respect of efficiency or delays. I don't see it at the moment. I see just a potential. In other words, hypothetically, yes, Parliament could be in recess when a vacancy occurs, and that could cause a problem. But my understanding is, to date, that hasn't happened. There's been no inefficiency or delay occasioned by our legislative mandate at the moment. So I actually reject both arguments, unless you can show to me that they're actually valid. I don't think they are valid. The separate one about whether there's a separation of powers issue, which we'll come to, I don't agree with you there either. But, okay, I'm happy. Thank you. Oh, sorry, and the question about whether there's uniformity in the appointment, thank you for the answer, that's exactly what I wanted. That applies presumably, I'm not talking about only the appointment procedure, I'm talking about the extension of boards, the operational matters, appointment of CEOs, the whole caboodle, is, other than the Academy. Are all the rest then, basically, it's the same package for everybody? Yeah, okay.
Yes, Chair, just to respond to Honourable Smith, We don't view, in a sense, the delays as delays caused by Parliament, in a sense. It's delays that are caused by the legislation. You know, I think during my time in this committee, for example, in the department, we haven't had a situation where we could point directly that the Parliament process or the Parliament delayed the process. I think the committee has always, you know, fast-tracked most of our processes. But I think it's the legislation, in a sense, you know, for us that, you know, causes the delay. That's why we opting to propose the changes.
I think what you are trying to say, which I think Honourable Smith wants to hear, is that the type of delay that you're talking about, it's not about Parliament, but it's, if there is the legislation where Parliament is involved in approving these shortlists, then there are delays because for that to be done, it's a process. Once, for instance, one member like that's what happened with Professor Lawrence. Once she says that she's not coming in, and then once she says she's coming back, then we've got to start afresh the process of doing the same which we did with the other 19 people. So that's, I think, the delay that you're talking about. I'm sure that is what Honourable Smith wants to be clarified on, but not that we, because actually we are the fastest moving parliamentary committee in terms of running around with our legislation. Even when you tell us at the corner of at the brink of a minute, like the one of Professor Lawrence, actually caused us a lot of unhealthy situation. But we did try to meet even the deadline, because we also have got deadline with parliamentary presentations here that it has got to be approved by the National Assembly, you see. So I think you made a mistake by not being clear in talking about why Parliament has been removed. If you said it has been removed by, from what Honorable Smith is saying, that it's the oversight role, the duality of power or the separation of powers, that if you put it straight like that, which I think she will deal with tomorrow morning, because I've had some thorough consultation with her. So I think that will be dealt with thoroughly tomorrow. The only problem why we have been removed is because of the separation of powers, rather than the delays and efficiencies from Parliament. I think that we must put it very clear. Yes.
Yes, Chair. I think thanks for that. I think that reference to efficiency, Honourable Smith, I think in the document should disappear. Actually, and because I think the Chair is correct, the biggest issue is the process that are defined in legislation that are a problem, and also this issue of separation of powers. Those are, I think, the two issues. Thanks.
Honourable Dunya.
I think in all this debate, I'm seated here, I'm asking myself, because it's separation of powers. Maybe it's how it's being termed. And that's the problem in me with legal terminology. It makes you run around, whereas it wants you to separate A from B. You can't be A and B at the same time. So I think it's the other area, Chair, that which I think for me it is fine. In listening to what the state law advisor was raising, which is something that we've always been talking to, I would have thought that in her presentation, in trying to make things clearer, or maybe that will be done tomorrow, is that in fact, I think we raised this with the department, is that we are not Chapter 9 institutions. Secondly, is that I see here that they have made some reference with the South African police and the higher education, which is what we requested. But in the main, what they are trying, making these amendments, is to separate so that, and I'm subject to correction, so that when we play our oversight role, which it is not eroded, we do that without any fear or favor, because we were not part of a process of saying this must be in the board, this one must not be in the board. I'm just putting it plainly as a that we'll have more guts in calling the minister to the portfolio committee when we see that a particular board is not doing something right. Having said that, I want to be clarified to the legal people. There is the one which talks about people who don't have, yes. Chapter 9, Section 3.1. Is it correct? Because having listened to Mr. Mavoso, I don't know why that terminology. Can't it be re-termed to exclude professional registration? For me, I'm not a legal fundi. If you say exclude, it means you can take anybody who is not a natural science professional, scientific professional, clause 9. It says to exclude professional registration requirements. If you say exclude, make me to understand, I'm not a legal fundi. If you say exclude, it imkhuphe, you can just take anybody, take that. Whereas as you explained for me, and I'm to be corrected, it needs a rewording. I am not a legal fundi. I'll always hammer into that. I understand what you are saying very well. But when you look into here, exclude, English is my 11th language, it's a Queen's language. I won't understand. Otherwise, it's only if I can be clarified on that, Chair, I think I'm fine for now.
Can I help there? I guess where is the problem? If you say exclude professional registration, then and you end up there, then it reads exactly there. But once you add requirements, then exclude professional registration requirements. Before there was, they had a problem which they are trying to eliminate. The problem was that before the Act was prescribing that a member of the board must have been registered with this scientific professions council. Now they are saying that this is no longer going to be the case. Anybody who is a relevant professional can apply, not necessarily that, because there are very few people who are registered with the scientific professions council. That has been a problem, according, but let them explain it properly to you.
No, thanks. Just to try and clarify to Honorable Tunjo, in the legislation itself, we have not used the word exclude. This was used in this schedule of amendments which we are presenting to the committee, because if you go to the legislation, it just, in other words, we're taking out the words professional natural scientist or certified scientist, just to say that's what we're taking out. So in other words, the legislation will say not fewer than four or not more than six must be in the service of the state, each nominated by his or her director general or chief executive officer of the organ of state concerned. Finished. So in other words, we're taking out those words that make reference to the professional and certified natural scientists. It does not talk about qualification. So it's more about the exclusion means is the exclusion of the requirement to be registered and certified. That's all it says. So it really, in this schedule, really, that's what we're trying to do. That's why the choice of words was exclude the requirement. And remember also, it doesn't talk about qualifications in this instance, Chair. You might find a PhD person in a microbiologist, but not registered and certified. That's what it really means. Thank you.
Actually, that act was passed by me. I know it very well. That's why I know what it was meant that time. It meant people. In fact, there was a very big argument. It took some days in Parliament with that act, exactly because of that reason. Because we felt that the act, if it includes this thing of that people must all be registered, people who have done natural sciences, that they must preach that it was going to exclude a number of actually disadvantaged communities, because most of them, they struggle even to reach their BSc level in natural sciences, let alone to be, because professional bodies are controlled by other bodies that are usually exclusive. And so we fought a long battle that the act has got to be reworded so that it does not include the majority of the people who have qualifications. And that is why until today, actually, not many people are still registered because of that reason. Although they have qualifications up to PhD level, it does not necessarily exempt you to be registered, because there is again another body which must look into whether you can be registered or not. Just like if you are an engineer, you still have to go to the Engineering Council of South Africa to register as a professional engineer, which is not as easy as it is just written down. The professional bodies, they tend to have their own bureaucracies in registering people in professional professions. So that was our concern when we passed this act. when it came, we tried to dilute it, and we did a lot to make it user-friendly. And that is why at least some people are still able today to register, but it has not been user-friendly as much as we suspected. Honourable Smith.
Yeah, Chair. Unfortunately, I don't have the principal act with me, so I can't see how the amendment fits in within the what the amendment is actually saying in relation to the principal clause. But be that as it may, I take it then from the explanation that what it's saying is that no fewer than four, not more than six, will be natural scientists in the employ of the service of the state, etc. In other words, they're still natural scientists, but they're not they're neither certified nor professionally registered.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
So the as long as I'm clear that they are nonetheless scientists,
yeah.
Is that definitely correct? Okay, then secondly, I'm aware of the fact, because we've had this as a briefing before, that many, if not most, natural scientists are not registered, and I frankly see no reason for them to be registered anyway. And if I were one, I would not register.
Mm.
So it's a silly provision anyway that it's there.
Mm.
But there's nothing here to say that a professional natural scientist has to be a registered professional scientist. The assumption that a profession requires registration applies for certain professions. Yes, if you're a lawyer, you have to be registered with the Bar Council or whatever, or you're an engineer with the Engineering Council, etc. It doesn't apply to every profession, unless you define profession only to mean that. I mean, I can be a teacher and not registered with a teaching council. I'm still a professional teacher. I don't have to be registered with anybody. I can have a PhD in pedagogics and I'm teaching in a private school somewhere. I'm not registered. So, in other words, the word professional natural scientist doesn't have to be read as meaning a registered, in which case you can still keep the word professional as long as you mean professional but not registered. I'm just wondering whether, you know, how that goes.
That's why that's exactly was our basis for argument, because it meant that to be a mathematician, in order to be employed as a mathematician, you should be registered under professions, this council, as a professional mathematician. Despite the certificate, despite everything that you have, you still need to have that in order to be recognized as a mathematician or a physicist or a chemist. It didn't make sense even to us.
As a result, what I'm saying is the word professional natural scientist then does not constitute a problem if you left the word professional scientist. But it doesn't matter as long as we understand that it has to be a scientist anyway.
Chair, just through you, Chair, just to indicate that the Principal Act as it was passed in 2003 did not have this provision, this clause that talks to professional natural scientists or certified natural. It's something that was inserted when we were doing the SNT Laws Amendment Bill in 2010. So your point is correct, Chair. If you look at the Principal Act, Honorable Smith, that was omitted. So I think it was an error that occurred in 2010. So we're really trying to reverse what we did in 2010 in the Laws Amendment, because the Principal Act did not have that part. So we're going back to the original wording of the Principal Act.
I remember very well. I would have been surprised that we ended up approving that, because we had a very long argument here in Parliament about that.
No, my apologies, Chair. No, Honourable Smith is just drawing my attention to the issue that the Act still talk about not fewer than 12, not more than 18, that must be professional natural scientists or certified natural scientists. This is correct in relation to other members of the Council. This relaxation or this exclusion only impacts those who are in the employment of the state. So that's the only part we're dealing with.
Sorry. And that's the very point I'm asking. Does that amendment, does the Principal Act make it quite clear that these four or six are still nonetheless scientists, even though they're not professionally registered? I took your answer to be yes. I don't see the wording that suggests they have to be scientists. It could be anybody.
To avoid a dialogue, The Principal Act does not make a provision that those who are in the employment of the state must be scientists. But we are, in the instance, making sure that, you know, departments appoint appropriate people who would be able to participate meaningfully in the deliberations of the council, rather than taking somebody who's not a qualified scientist in that regard. So we did not put it in the Act because, again, we'll be limiting ourselves if we do that for future appointments.
Okay. Yeah. Right. If I may, I mean, I've got no problem with that, but I mean, it was the impression given that the departmental representatives are nonetheless scientists, and the Act was, you know, they're going to be scientists, but we're not going to have them as professional or certified. The law that we're writing is not saying that. It's saying we can appoint anybody. Then on the side, what we're saying is, but we'll try and find scientists. That's not the same thing. I mean, I think we need to be very clear on what is being said versus what's intended to be done. They're not the same thing.
The person who is scientifically qualified, not who is scientifically registered. I think we must... Are there still further inputs? Further responses? Or this is the end of the responses.
Thanks, Chair. Honorable Topaz Lawrence asked why the last page. What we're trying to achieve here? For instance, there are some typing errors on the bill which occurred, I think, between the...
They dealt with that when she responded. She dealt with what are those technical errors all about in the last pages, and they have nothing to do with the Principal Act.
Yes.
That's what she said, isn't it?
Yes, thanks, Chair.
Or you want to hear his voice also, okay. Continue.
Okay, thanks, Chair. And there are one or two other, you know, omissions relating to the purpose of standardization that were not picked up in time, especially with regard to the determination of the conditions of unity to ensure that there is a complete standardization across the board, and an issue that Honourable has raised, and that's what the purpose primarily of the Act is. But there was one or two legislations that laws that the issues of determination of conditions of service were not in the bill provided for to ensure that there is that standardization. So this is what we're probably going to propose to ensure that the completeness of the exercise.
Honourable
Smith. Chair, I know it sounds like I'm harping on about something very minor, but I do want to lodge a slight objection. It's just that, you know, we are processing legislation. We're not kind of talking about anything else. And the clause we've just dealt with now, I think it's been most unsatisfactorily dealt with, clause 9, because the document we've been given here is actually wrong. The document here says that the purpose of this is to exclude professional registration requirements of state representatives. That is not what it does at all. It doesn't remove professional registration requirements. It removes the requirements to be a scientist at all. The policy decision that the department makes in respect of this, which is to go and find scientists in the departments, is a policy issue. It's nothing to do with the law. They could appoint janitors or disabled lift operators or anybody they want to do. They could find anybody. And what we've been told here is not exactly what is actually is happening in the bill. I really would appreciate greater accuracy on the statements made. I understand what your objections were. What you're saying is we don't want to have to say that they have to be scientists, but we're going to urge them to be scientists. But that's different to the law. We're writing the principle, an act now. And if we say we're excluding professional requirements, that's what we should be doing. We're not. We're excluding the entire obligation to be a scientist at all. Just a comment.
I think, as if I remember, they did. He did say that what is there, maybe it was put wrong, it's not what is in law. I think he did say that. You see, which is your point, I think. That's what he said. Didn't you say so?
I don't think there's any harm, Honorable Smith, to put the word scientist, as long as we are not saying professionally registered or certified. In a sense, but we have to consult, but I think, Chair, we can actually put that. I'm not sure whether Honorable Smith will.
We're not arguing about the merits of the case. Many are arguing about the way the information is presented, so for us to process. The merits of the case is a separate issue. Maybe it's good, maybe it's bad. We can talk about that. But I'm just concerned about the veracity of the statements made.
I think you are dragging us behind. I think Honorable Smith had understood what is supposed to be the correcting. I thought when I intervened to say that that's what you once said here, you said that that was that is your wording, which he feels that it's not correct because it says something else than what is in the law itself, you see. Now, I do not know why you drag us behind now, because you're supposed to say, yeah.
I withdraw.
My Luigi.
I withdraw.
Honorable Tunja.
I think Honorable Smith is supporting what I said. That can't there be any rewording of that to suit in line with your explanation? And I think that's what they'll have to do. They will have, as he's saying, they must consult, but reword that in line with the consultation, because if it's not reworded, this means something else to me.
So it is clear that the committee is very unhappy with the wording there, which preambles that we have accepted your presentation. So the presentation is considered conditionally accepted pending the ratification of that clause. I think makes it very easy now, because we are saying that you must differentiate between a scientific qualification and scientific profession. You see, that you are not seeking a scientifically registered professional. But you are looking for scientific professionals. You see? Yeah. I think that was it very easily. So let us accept, therefore, that at this juncture, that's where you understand and take it up, and you will correct that so that if anybody can come and refer to these papers, the committee did raise its concern about the wedding. Because the wedding means something else, if you like. So there are more than two members that are complaining about the wedding, which means that it can't be very correct, therefore. It should, because what you present or what you correct must be consistent with what is in the bill itself, which is going to become the act. You see, you cannot come and present to us here and have something else in the act. Or in the bill. I think that's what the concern of the members is all about. Okay, I think at this juncture, with no more inputs, I can take it that the session ends here, and we can meet tomorrow to finalize. That tomorrow will be a committee. It's necessarily a committee session, which must include the state law advisors, the parliamentary law advisors, and then they can guide us, we can go through. You must go and study those papers that have been prepared by the law advisors, our law advisors. Prepare them for tomorrow so that when we go through this, actually we don't even have what they have here, because tomorrow is our day. We can change everything that we want, including their wedding, you see. So if that wording that they have is something that we don't like, we will change it and put what we want. So even whether they can live here without agreeing that they will change, but they will find it changed at the end. There is nothing that... So, thank you very much, then. I think the committee's meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.